If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Jesus is saying finders are weepers and losers are keepers. When it comes to this physical life, we must, as the song said, be willing to lose ourselves completely for the sake of Jesus Christ and His gospel. I wonder, as I read that, how many of us believe that saying. Because if we believe it, we are swimming against the stream of modern philosophy. It's against everything the advertisers are telling us. It's against everything that's on soap operas and sitcoms. It's against the philosophy of the business world. It's even against the philosophy of the Wall Street gospel that is being preached today. A gospel of getting rather than giving. A gospel that reduces God down to the level of a divine genie who grants you three wishes whenever you want them. This gospel seems so opposite to that. And yet what Jesus is saying is the very heart of the Christian life. He is, in these verses, telling us in His own terms what it means to follow Him. He's not leaving it open to anyone else's decision or opinion of what it means to be a Christian. He is giving us His definition of a disciple. It was Dietrich Bonhoeffer who said, "When Christ calls a man, He bids him to come and die." To go on a death march, and that's what we read here in these verses. Jesus' own definition of a disciple. Now keep something in mind. Although it says in verse 24 that Jesus said to His disciples, if you read this account in the other two Gospels, it says Jesus said to His disciples and to the people who were following Him these very things. In other words, this is not just a text for 12 apostles or for certain disciples or for certain pastors. This is a message for all Christians at all times through all periods of history. It's a message that we obviously need to listen to this morning. Also, this is not the first time Jesus brings this message. In fact, if you were to read the Gospels, Jesus mentions these exact things no less than 7 times. At different places, at different times, Jesus shares the same words. Now, I'm sure I can hear some of the disciples, after hearing that a couple times, saying, "Jesus, we've heard this sermon before. You preached this a few months ago. Can't you come up with something new?" And then I'm reminded of the words of Peter, who in his epistle said, "I will not be negligent to always bring you in remembrance of these things, though you already know them and are established in the present truth." It seems that there are truths that we forever need to be reminded of, isn't it? That we can always hear over and over again because of the temptation to forget them. And Jesus repeats this many times. I think it was Dwight L. Moody who actually preached the same sermon 2 weeks in a row. And somebody came up to him and said, "When are you going to preach another sermon?" He said, "When you live that one, then I'll preach another one." Oh, how easy it is to forget. And you know what I found? That the Christian life is not a progression to advanced techniques of superior learning. But the Christian life is the repetition of the basic truths over and over again until they become a part of us. And you know, there are still some fundamental truths that I have yet to work out in my life. I'm not ready for the master's degree yet. I'm still, in many cases, like you are, learning ABCs, how to walk diligently with the Lord Jesus Christ. You know, the last few weeks, we have seen many people respond to the gospel message here on Sunday morning and Sunday evenings, make decisions to follow the Lord, many of them. And while we rejoice with that, and we should, we also now want to see those who have made a decision to follow the Lord find out what it means to be a disciple, to walk and to progress in their walk with the Lord. Listen to what Paul says to the Colossians. "As you have therefore received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk in Him, rooted and built up in Him, and established in the faith. That is the desire of the Lord now that you've made the commitment, young or old, in the Lord. Whether you've walked with Him 1 week and your birthday was last week you gave your life to Jesus, or you have walked for a long time with Him. Listen, Christianity is not just obstetrics. Isn't it funny how we look toward the big event? Well, how many people raised their hands today? Christianity is more than obstetrics. It's pediatrics. It's emergency room care. Internal medicine, all the way up to geriatrics. It's a progression through the Christian life. Look back a few verses. Oh, verse 21, we should start. And first of all, let's examine the occasion that sparked this little sermon by Jesus to His disciples. Remember that the disciples and Jesus were having a conversation, and Peter butted in with the right answer. He said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus said, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jona. Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but My Father who is in heaven. And I say, you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build My church." And then in verse 21, as the conversation continues, "From that time Jesus began to show His disciples that He must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and be killed, and be raised again the third day. And then Peter took Him aside and began to rebuke Him, saying, 'Far be it from you, Lord. This shall not happen to you.'" Poor Peter. Can you imagine rebuking God? Peter did not expect the words that came out of Jesus' mouth, that the Messiah would go and suffer at the hand of the Jewish leaders and be killed. He did not expect it. Peter had a wonderful but a dangerous thing happen to him. He was complimented. And that kind of ruined Peter for a little while. He was like a kid that gets the only A in class on the test. He was the one that said, "You are the Christ." And when Jesus turned to Peter and said, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah," can you imagine how that made Peter feel? I think I know. Because I can relate a lot to Peter. He thought, "Did you hear that, boys? Blessed am I." He didn't mention any of your names. He said, "I am blessed. Simon, son of Jonah. That is me and me only." And it made him feel so grandiose, so good. And he probably expected Jesus to compliment him a second time when He took him aside and said, "Now, Jesus, this isn't going to happen to you." He probably thought Jesus would say, "Well, you're right, Peter. I was just testing you a second time and you got this one right." But instead, He turned and said to Peter, next verse, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but of the things of man." I can imagine Peter lovingly, protectingly putting that big, hairy fisherman's arm around Jesus and giving Him some advice. In fact, the Greek language suggests that Peter had a reaction to what Jesus said. And literally, it's Peter caught Jesus or grabbed Jesus. Probably put his arm around Him, ushered Him away, and in a stage whisper said, "Now, Jesus, you shouldn't say those things. That is negative confession. You should never say you're going to die, because if you confess that, you might die. Now, we believe you're the Messiah, but quit talking like this. Far be it from you." You can understand how Peter felt, because Peter was still thinking in terms of not a dying Messiah. Remember, he was Jewish and had the anticipation that Messiah would conquer Rome and would become a warrior king. Talking about dying sounded ridiculous. What if a young president, on his inauguration day, as the country is listening to him, the young president would come up and say, "Thank you for voting for me. I'm glad I won the election." And he proceeded to give a detailed explanation of his reforms and changes now that he's president. All the things he will do for the country. And after his speech, people are filled with anticipation. They have a new hope that somehow this president's going to be different, and they applaud and they're so excited. But at the very end, what if the young president were to say, after all of his reforms that he had planned, if he were to say, now, one final note, they have just found that I have terminal cancer and I will be dead within a few weeks. What would be the reaction of the American people? Shock! How on earth does this guy think he can fulfill all of those promises if he's going to die soon? That's what Peter felt like. You're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Oh, I'm going to die soon, Peter. No way! Far be it from you, Lord. The reaction that Jesus, or should I say the response that Jesus gave to Peter, kind of makes us stand back a little bit. Now, why would Jesus be so harsh with Peter and say, get behind me, Satan? Don't you think Jesus could have said, down, boy. Peter, relax. Let me explain to you what this is all about. Why did he say, get behind me, Satan? Because I believe it's as if Jesus was saying when Peter said, no, Lord, don't go to Jerusalem, don't die. It was as if Jesus was saying, I recognize that voice. I've heard that somewhere before. In fact, 3 years ago in the wilderness, when Satan came to me and said, you don't have to go the way of the cross. You want the whole world? I'll give it to you now if you bow down and worship me. Take a shortcut. Don't go God's way, go my way. Jesus recognized that voice. Although Peter said it, it was the philosophy of Satan. And do you know that Peter's response to Jesus in saying, no, Lord, don't go, is the basic philosophy of this world? And that's what Jesus was rebuking. The basic philosophy of this world is spare yourself. Take care of yourself. Watch out for numero uno. If you don't take care of yourself, no one else will. It is the philosophy of self-love. You are the most important creature in God's universe. Don't go to the cross. Spare yourself. Don't go this painful way. Get behind me, Satan. And Jesus qualifies that by saying, you're not thinking like God thinks. You are mindful of the things of man, not the things of God. The basic theme of most advertisements is self. You deserve a break today. Do it for yourself. You're worth it. I saw a commercial recently advertising skin cream. It was a little more expensive than most skin creams, and it had this beautiful gal on there who just put this cream on her face. And she looked right into the camera and said, you know, though it's more expensive, I'm worth it. Oh, gag. I'm worth it. Jesus, don't go to Jerusalem. Don't suffer. You're worth it. Get behind me, Satan. Peter, oh Peter, represents many people who don't want to hear about a cross in Christianity. They want to hear all about the glories, all about the victories. But the minute you mention suffering, no way, don't say that. We have substituted Christianity for a cheap substitute by taking the cross completely out of it. I heard of a guy who went down to South America in one of those open-air bazaars where they try to sell things for very inexpensively and you can get good deals in the open-air markets. And under one tent was a sign that said, cheap crosses. And he thought to himself, yep, that's what people want. Cheap crosses. Or no cross at all. As in Peter's case. Far be it from you, Lord. We need, I believe, to get back to this whole issue of the cross, for you can't have Christianity without it. You have no crown apart from a cross. And Peter's thought was to spare yourself, don't go to the cross. A.W. Tozer, I love his writings. He said, the old cross slew men. The cross of modern Christianity simply entertains men. Boy, that's true. These days, we don't want to hear much about sacrifice. Oh, it's another one of these sermons. Deny yourself. Sacrifice sermons. I don't want to hear that. Well, the philosophy of Jesus, folks, is so different. It was Socrates who said, know thyself. It was Freud who said, be thyself. But it was Jesus who said, give thyself. And now he's telling Peter, Peter, readjust your thinking. I know you don't expect a suffering Messiah, but I'm going to go suffer and I'm going to die. And that's the whole conversation that sparked this sermon in verses 24 through 27. And now Jesus not only says, I'm going to the cross, but he said, if you're going to follow me, here is my description of a Christian. Here is my definition and outline of a disciple. And he says, if anyone desires to come after me. He's about to give us his terms. And I'd like you to mark each phrase very carefully. Because if you desire to follow Jesus, you don't follow on your own terms. You follow on his terms. Whoever would desire to come after me. This describes, number one, that young believer who first raises up his or her hand and says, today I'm making a decision to come after Jesus. It also describes the older, more seasoned believer who's walked with Christ already and has already made the decision. I am coming after Jesus. Older Christians, those who have walked with the Lord for some time, do you ever face the temptation to take back what you've surrendered to God? Have you noticed that following the Lord is a constant choice? It's not just a one-time thing. Because it seems like we want to take back what we've surrendered to the Lord. Lord, no, I've given you my life, but could I just borrow that one little area of my life just for the weekend? I just want to have one fling, a little bit of fun. I'll give it back to you on Monday. But just let me borrow it. You could sum up Jesus' description of a disciple by three words, three uncomfortable words, by the way. You probably won't like them, but here they are. Number one, denial. Number two, death. And number three, devotion. Look at each one. If anyone desires to come after me, let him first deny himself, which in Greek means completely disown himself. That does not mean that we are to hate ourselves or get up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, you are ugly. You are wretched. Nor does it mean that we deny things for ourselves, although it does take that into consideration. Don't get it confused. Jesus did not say, whoever wants to come after me, let him deny certain things from his life. No, you have to deny yourself, not necessarily things for yourself. You need to deny your very self. Let me read this verse in the Wiest literal Greek translation of the New Testament. I think you'll understand it better. Whoever desires to come after me, let him forget himself and lose sight of his own interests. In other words, it means you deny rights over yourself. It means you turn the pink slip of your life over to Jesus Christ. It means you get out of the driver's seat, hand him the keys and say, you drive. And you sit in the back seat. And don't be a backseat driver either. Lord, watch out for that truck. No, turn right, not left. Deny yourself. Let him take over. Give him the whole thing, every area. It means you deny the right to make your own choice over your own life. It means you take all of the plans that you've made concerning your future and you say, Lord, here they are. If you don't want them, then just rip it up and throw it away and give me a new set of plans. But this is what I want, your will. I'm turning myself over to you. You must deny yourself. Take up your cross and follow Jesus. It's the opposite of being independent. Ooh, and we don't like that. We relish the thought of being controlled by ourselves. I found an article I wanted to share with you. It's tastefully called The Art of Being a Big Shot. And here's a portion of it. And I think this is what Jesus had in mind when he said, deny yourself. This man says, it is my pride that makes me independent of God. It's appealing for me to feel that I am the master of my fate, that I run my own life, call my own shots, and go it alone. But that feeling is my basic dishonesty, because I can't go it alone. I have to get help from other people, and I can't ultimately rely on myself. I am dependent on God for my next breath. It is dishonest of me to pretend that I am anything but a man, small, weak, and limited. So, living independent of God is self-delusion. It is not just a matter of pride being an unfortunate little trait and humility being an attractive little virtue. It's my inner psychology or my inner psychological integrity that's at stake. When I am conceited, I am lying to myself about what I am. I am pretending to be God and not man. My pride is the idolatrous worship of myself, and that is the national religion of hell. Oh, you want to come after me? That's good. Give me the pink slip. Don't follow me when it's convenient. I want all of you. Lock, stock, and barrel. Deny rights to your own life. It means to agree with Paul the Apostle when he said, you are not your own, you're bought with a price. You now belong to Jesus. He died on the cross for you. You are his property. And so you deny yourself. And secondly, he said, take up his cross. That's the second step. You deny ownership, but then you take up your cross. You know, the cross has lost so much of its original meaning and impact. The cross has been clothed with so much religiosity. The cross has become an icon to worship or a piece of jewelry around our neck. But when Jesus spoke about the cross to his disciples, it had a repelling impact. Because the cross was a symbol of torture and death. The disciples had seen people being crucified. The cross was reserved for Rome's worst enemies. And when Jesus said, disciples, I want you to take up your cross, the picture they had in their mind was not a piece of jewelry. The picture they had in their mind was a criminal on a death march, carrying a beam across his shoulders, walking to the place of crucifixion in a few hours to lose his life. I guess the modern day equivalent of the cross would be the electric chair. Now, we don't see too many diamond studded electric chairs around people's necks, do we? We would say that's kind of gross. Because the electric chair is a symbol of torture and capital punishment, so is the cross. And what Jesus is saying is that if you are going to follow me, you deny the right over your own life because I own you, and then you follow me to sacrificial service. Sacrificial service. Your life is not your own. I'm going to the cross. You're going to the cross. You know, I have heard people misinterpret what a cross is. Every little hardship in life or relationship that doesn't work out, they call that their cross to bear. Oh, my husband, he's my cross in life to bear. Oh, my wife, yep, she's my cross. Or certainly maybe many of us could say, my pushy mother-in-law. Now talk about a cross. But a cross means that I am willing to abandon my own plans, luxuries, people, or possessions to follow where he wants me to go. I have to be willing to do that. I heard a story of a plantation slave in the Old South. Although he was a slave, he was always happy, singing, joyful. And his master came to him one day and said, you know, you are always so happy. How can I get what you have? He says, well, I love the Lord Jesus Christ. He's forgiven me of all my sins. And the master said, how can I get that? How can I be so happy over that? He said, I'll tell you what to do. I want you to go home, put on your best Sunday suit, and come work in the mud with me. And the master said, I would never do that. And he stormed away. Came back a couple weeks later, asked him the same question, got the same answer. Came to him a third time, and he said, now look, be straight with me. What do I have to do to get what you have? And he said, The answer is still the same. Get on your best suit and come and work with me in the mud. And the master, the owner, in desperation, put up his hands and said, all right, I'll do it. And just as he was turning away, the slave said, now you don't have to do it. You just had to be willing. You may not be a martyr and go to the cross like Jesus did. You may not have your life taken away. You may not lose your life following the Lord. But you need to be willing to do it. I'm going to read to you what Peter said, who wrote to the Christians in persecution, who was there when Jesus spoke these words. Peter said, beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice. Now listen, rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, and that when His glory is revealed, you may be glad with exceeding joy. You see, a cross is not just a hardship or a difficulty in life. It is a hardship or a difficulty that you suffer because you are a Christian. Because you follow the Lord. If He has caused you any kind of discomfort because you're a Christian, that's your cross and nothing less. Perhaps you have some ambition that you had to lay down because you felt you were obeying God. I'll never forget. When I was in college, I wanted to go to medical school. My father said, if you go to medical school and become a doctor, I will pay for all of your education. You don't have to pay a cent. And it was so hard for me to say no to that because I felt like the Lord wanted me to continue full-time in the ministry. And I had to make a choice because I love medical work. I love hospitals. The Lord said, lay it down. And some of you have had to lay down ambitions because you were obedient to God. Remember what Paul said? I beg you by the mercies of God that you present yourselves, your bodies, as a living sacrifice. That's what Christians are. They're living sacrifices. In the Old Testament, they brought dead sacrifices, which is a lot easier, by the way. It's a lot easier to bring an animal, kill it, and plop it on an altar and say, here, here's my sacrifice. But you are a living sacrifice. And living sacrifices are different from dead sacrifices because living sacrifices always want to squirm off of the altar. They're still alive. You get on the altar and dedicate your life to the Lord, you squirm off of it. You have to get back on it constantly. Well, you are a living sacrifice. God doesn't want to kill you necessarily or have you go to the martyr's den, but to simply live the life sacrificially in serving Him. And then Jesus said, follow me. That's devotion. Follow me means to walk the same road that I walk. If any of you have the Amplified version, it says this, cleave steadily to me, conform wholly to my example in living, and if need be, in dying also. In other words, the Christian life is a life of obedience. Number one, you come and deny yourself. Lord, here's the pink slip. You're the owner now. I take my hands off of my future, off of my rights to do anything but your will. And Lord, I also go on a death march. Anything that causes me discomfort because I follow you, fine. And then devotion. Walk consistently and steadily after the Lord, a life of obedience. That's what following the Lord is. Now, it's amazing how many people will call themselves Christians but will not follow Jesus. They'll follow Jesus on their own terms. You must follow after me consistently, constantly. As I read this week these verses, I was looking at how appealing the Christian life would be to people hearing this for the first time. And I came to the conclusion after reading these verses, Lord, this doesn't sound very good. It's not a good deal, it sounds like. You want to follow me? Deny yourself. Go to the cross. Follow after me. I'm thinking, now, why? Is it worth living this way all of my life? Why is it worth it? And then I read the next verse and I understood. For what is a man profited if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? What will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and he will reward each according to his works. You see, Jesus said, this is what a disciple is, and now here's the reasons why you ought to do it. Because of what you'll gain if you do, because of what you'll lose if you don't, and because of who you'll face in the end. You're going to face my son. Some of you have heard of the Emperor Charlemagne, who ruled, in the 900s. When he died, before he died, he ordered that when he was dead, he would be put in the throne of the kingdom, crown on top of his head, Bible in his hand, scepter at his side. And they did that. 180 years later, the Emperor Otho uncovered the tomb of Charlemagne and found him in his skeleton, sitting upon his throne, crown upon his skull, and his bony finger pointed to a verse in the Bible. Guess what verse it was? If a man gain the whole world and lose his own soul. What Jesus is saying is, if you try with all of your might to keep this earthly life with all of its comfort, all of its ease, and you neglect spiritual matters, you will lose eternal life. In other words, go for it now and lose it all later. Or be willing to lose it all now and gain it forever. And then he gives the ultimate hyperbole. Imagine if a person could own everything in the world and the world was at his fingertips. That person is still a walking dead man because he has nothing for eternity. He's going to forfeit his soul in the end. How often we have thought that if we could only get or obtain or become something else, that we would be happy. You know, I know if I can only really save up and get that brand new home, or if I could get that new car, or if I could have that girlfriend or boyfriend or husband or wife or position, I would be satisfied. The world thinks that way. The world thinks that there's a number of things that will fulfill. Well, if I can just have enough sexual activity, I'll be fulfilled. If I can have money and fame, I'll be fulfilled. Let me ask you a question. Let me put it to you this way. If any of those things could fulfill, then it would stand to reason that the person that has the most of them would be the happiest. So if sex really fulfills, it seems that the prostitute should be the happiest person in the world. But is she? If drugs bring satisfaction, then the heroin addict should be jumping with joy. If the person that has the biggest bank account and the most power, if that's what brings satisfaction, then that person should be the happiest. But we know that's not true either. In fact, I found a quote I wanted to share with you. Andrew Carnegie, a multimillionaire, said, you know, millionaires seldom smile. What a letdown. Millionaires seldom smile? Yep. J. Paul Getty said, I would exchange all of my fortunes for one happy marriage. See, those things don't satisfy. And then let's say a person says, well, I'm happy without being a Christian. I have a nice bank account, I have a nice home, I've got it made, and I'm happy the way I am. Well, verse 27 says, the Son of Man will come in His glory, the glory of His Father with His angels, and then He will reward each according to His works. No matter what you're hiding now, you'll stand before God one day and give an account. So although you might be satisfied temporarily, one day you'll stand before God, and that's no joke. And so what Jesus is doing is Peter says, far be it from you, Lord. He says, Peter, let me boil life down to two approaches, two columns, two ideals. And here they are. Deny yourself or live for yourself. Take up your cross or ignore the cross. Follow Christ or follow the world. Lose your life for His sake. Or keep your life for your own sake. Forsake the world or gain the world. Keep your soul or lose your soul. Share in His reward and glory or lose His reward and lose His glory. In other words, finders, weepers, losers, keepers. Go for the world, you'll be a loser. forsake it all, you'll be a keeper. You'll be a winner. I believe that the Lord is calling us back to real Christianity. You know, the early Christians were not perfect. And I am not advocating perfection, but they were radical. And this stuff we read is radical stuff. It's not pious religious bunk. It's radical living. Deny yourself. Take up a cross and follow Jesus and be willing to give it all up and change your plans and give Him the pink slip. That's radical stuff. And we need to examine our lives in light of that. And I guess the question most of us Christians would be asking is, how do I really know then that I am dying to myself? Oh, this is how you can know. When you are forgotten or neglected or purposely set at naught, and you sting with hurt and with the insult or the oversight, but your heart is happy, being counted worthy to suffer for Christ, that is dying to self. When your good is evil spoken of, and when your wishes are crossed, your advice disregarded, your opinions ridiculed, and you refuse to let anger rise in your heart, or even defend yourself, but take it all in patient, loving silence, that is dying to self. When you lovingly and patiently bear any disorder, any irregularity, any annoyance, when you can stand face to face with waste, folly, extravagance, spiritual insensibility, and endure it as Jesus endured it, that is dying to self. When you are content with any food, any offering, any raiment, any climate, any society, any attitude, any interruption by the will of God, that is dying to self. When you never care to refer to yourself in a conversation or record your own good works or itch after commendation, when you can truly love to be unknown, that is dying to self. When you see your brother prosper and have his needs met and can honestly rejoice with him in spirit and feel no envy or question God, while your own needs are far greater and in desperate circumstances, that is dying to self. When you can receive correction and reproof from one of less stature than yourself and can humbly submit inwardly as well as outwardly, finding no rebellion or resentment rising up within your heart, that is dying to self. Oh, Lord, help us. That truth is anchored in Romans 12:1. I beseech you by the mercies of God, present your bodies as a living sacrifice to God. Here's the pink slip, Lord, I deny myself. And it's a daily, constant thing. In fact, in Luke's gospel, Jesus is recorded as saying, take up your cross daily and follow after me. It's not just the one-time big spiritual donations that we give. It's the constant life of sacrifice that we live. It's a process. And the first step is to present. Present yourself to God. The first step for many of you is to come and say, Lord, here is my life. Today I'm going to give my life over to you. Here's the keys. You take over. See, up to this point, you've been driving like nuts. You've been driving all over the place with your life, and you haven't gotten anywhere. You really don't know where you're going, and how can you know the way? And Jesus is saying, would you just turn the keys over? Give me the ownership slip to your life. Present yourself to me. Deny yourself. And then you'll learn to take up your cross. You'll learn to follow me, but take the first step. Would you bow your head with me, please? Heavenly Father, following you takes a definite act of will and commitment. We just don't fall into Christianity. We make a decision to walk and follow you. The first step is to deny ourselves, to present ourselves completely to you, to recognize that you paid a price on the cross and that we ought not to own ourselves any longer.